Hello, and welcome to the So What podcast, in which political economic analyst JP Lantman discusses the issues uppermost in the minds of South Africans. You can find a written version of this content on JP's website, jplantman.co.za. I am Ruda Lantman, and I am your host. Hello, and as always, a very warm welcome to a conversation which goes with an extraordinary newsletter. Extraordinary in the sense that it comes only 3 days after the previous one. We recorded one for the 4th of April on the water situation in South Africa. This one is dated the 7th of April, and the title is, of course, Of Budgets and Tariffs. Why are we doing this?
Because both those events, the approval of the budget in South Africa, and on the same afternoon, the introduction of tariffs by Donald Trump, are actually quite momentous events, each one on their own. And I thought it would be appropriate that we combine them in one newsletter and discuss both. So it's really two very different topics that occur, are things that occurred on the same day.
So first tell us what exactly happened in Parliament on Wednesday, the 2nd of April.
What happened in Parliament was that Parliament approved the fiscal framework. And what is the fiscal framework? It is basically the revenue, the expenditure, and the borrowings for the coming year, financial year of the state, which must be set, has been set by Parliament.
So those figures are set in stone.
They're now set in stone. They're now locked. But the budget has got four approval processes. And the fiscal framework was the first approval process. And the relevance of that first approval process is, as you say, it sets in stone those three very important numbers. To what revenue do we commit ourselves? In other words, what taxes? To what expenditure do we commit ourselves, or the so-called appropriations in the jargon? And then thirdly, what do we borrow? And those are really the critical numbers around the macro budget. And that was approved on Wednesday afternoon. And the way the approval works, just to give you the detail, on the previous day, the Tuesday, there was a committee meeting. The legislation requires that a parliamentary committee must meet on the framework, hear public representations, listen to people, and then make a recommendation. And that's what they did. And they recommended to Parliament that the framework be adopted. And that debate took place on Wednesday.
And it passed, but only just.
Yes, very interesting. The number was 194 in favor and 182 against, which means a majority of 12. Now, that sounds okay until you realize that there were 24 members of the House of the National Assembly who did not vote. And they were mainly members of MK and the EFF, but they were also members from other parties who talked against the budget but walked out of the Assembly before they had to vote. So that number added up to 24. Now you can work out for yourself, if the majority was 12 and 24 people didn't vote, this thing could easily have gone a different way. So it was, as Wellington said, a damn close run thing.
That was of the Battle of Waterloo, less. How do the approval process work from now on? There are a number of things that have to be approved.
Yes, correct. As I've said, there are four rounds of approvals. The first one now was approving the fiscal framework. So that was done. The DA wants to go and challenge that in court, and we will have to see how that plays out. But Parliament has done that first approval. The second approval, which must happen within 35 days of the approval of the framework, is to approve the division of revenue. South Africa has got three levels of government: national, provincial, local. Basically, all taxes, i.e. all revenue, are collected by the national government. There's a little bit in the provinces, a little bit in local government, but essentially all revenue is collected by SARS for the national government. Then the constitution requires that pool of money cannot just all be kept by the central government or the national government. It must divvied up to the provinces and to the local municipalities. That is the so-called equitable share. And that bill is an important one because it divides the money. And it must be adopted within 35 working days, which effectively takes it to about the 27th of May. By then, that division of revenue bill must be passed by Parliament. So that's the second one. The third level is within 4 months from the start of the state's financial year, which is 1 April, within 4 months, the appropriation bill, which is basically the expenditure of the state, must be approved. That takes us, the target date for that then will be, if you start on 1 April, will be 31 July, 4 months later. And that's a long and tedious process where the budget gets scrutinized in detail on the expenditure side. That's where the various committees in Parliament for defense, for justice, for education, for the environment, where they go through their different budgets and screen them and interact with the government and bureaucrats about them. So that's a fairly important and a detailed process. And then the last round has got no fixed date to it. That is the approval of the revenue bills. In other words, the approval of taxation laws. Traditionally, that is done before Parliament rises for the year. So there's a retrospective element. You approve the revenue bills, say, in September or October before Parliament adjourns, but they apply from the beginning of the tax year, which is 1 March. And I suppose at some point some activist lawyer will question that and say you can't have a retroactive bill. But at the moment, that's not on the table. So those are the 4 levels of approval that are needed.
But in the meantime, the new tax year and the new financial year start. So how does that affect the whole process?
Yeah, a very important point. The fiscal year starts on 1 April, as I've said. The tax year, as listeners would know, starts on the 1st of March. Now, if your fiscal year, your financial year starts on the 1st of April, but you have a tax increase only in May, it means for 2 months you don't have the income from that increase. If you now delay it from May to June, the gap becomes bigger. If you delay it to July, August, September, the gaps become very, very big. In fact, if you delay it for 12 months, there's no income from that particular tax rise. So the reality of the date is that you have to proceed with implementation of tax increases quite quickly. And that means that the 0.5% VAT will be implemented on 1 May. Let's just go back and see the whole picture. The 0.5% VAT increase is in your revenue number, which is approved in the fiscal framework. You must now give practical gestalt to that fiscal framework. So you've got to start the VAT increase to collect the money for the year. And that date is 1 May.
And then what if Parliament after that says, no, we're not going to raise the VAT rate?
Well, that'll come in the revenue bills towards the end of the year. Parliament will then have to step up and accept responsibility for the fact that there aren't enough money collected to finance the expenditure which they have authorized. It's a decision that Parliament cannot really take, and I think all responsible parties will cooperate to avoid that.
Now, the big question, will the DA leave the GNU? What's your take?
As of today's date, that is uncertain. There's a lot of noise and dust. My own view is that it's not a foregone conclusion. It is true that there are 2 factions in ANC, but there are also 2 factions in the DA. And in both parties, there's a faction that wants the GNU to continue and a faction that wants the GNU to break up. And or at least only continue on their rather strenuous conditions. Will it play out that way? I honestly don't know. We'll have to see which way it goes. If they leave, the ANC would be able to form a government with about 202 votes in the National Assembly. Depending on who supports them, maybe 210 votes or 208 votes rather. So it'll be a very slim majority, and the whips will have their hands full to make sure that at every time there's a vote, all the members are there and they all vote.
Who is included in that?
Well, it'll be the ANC, it'll be the IFP, it'll be the Patriotic Alliance, it'll be GUD, the parties that have so far supported the process.
But not the EFF?
No, not the EFF and not the MK. I haven't included them in those numbers. Now, that's okay. You know, you can run the country if you have a majority of 2 or 3, but it's not a comfortable position, and it would, of course, be much better if the government of national unity has got a stronger majority. If the remaining government then allows the EFF or MK in, they can have more numbers, but I'm not sure they will have more stability. So I don't think that's a good situation.
So what at this point?
Well, I think the first point is the approval of the fiscal framework was important. In the past, we've taken these things almost as automatic. Now democracy is asserting itself. There's no longer one party controlling parliament or having a majority in parliament. And it was kind of an experience in dealing with democratic forces, shaping the budget. So getting that fiscal framework through was an important thing. As I've said, it sets in stone three important numbers, and everything else must now fit into those numbers. So that's something to be happy about. Secondly, the second so what, I think we must accept that the VAT increase will come in force on 1 May. And with that, we must accept that I do not think there's going to be a reduction in personal tax rates as proposed by Action SA. To not increase the VAT rate and to give the reduced tax rates will cost 31 billion rand. Now, there are no money trees in the country where you can go and pluck money off. So I don't think it's possible to find that amount of money. So I don't think that income will be sacrificed.
And your third, so what is a motion of commiseration for the whips for the next while?
Yes, indeed. You know, that those numbers that we had, 194 in favor, 182 against, the majority of 12, but 24 people didn't vote. That means that in the further rounds of approval, the other rounds that are now still left over, which we discussed, the whips will have their work cut out to make sure that all the members are there all the time. Sometimes people are sick, sometimes people are on a study visit or they travel or whatever. Well, they'll have to be in the house when there's a vote. That is what the whips are there for, but they will have their hands full. And so it is quite possible that we see in the three further rounds of approvals, if the DA leaves the GNU, we may see in the further three rounds of approval that it's again a very damn close-run thing. That may become the hallmark of this year's budget.
Turning to tariffs, first, just a summary, what has happened?
Well, on the same day that we approved the budget, Trump announced what he calls Liberation Day, where he imposed tariffs on the whole world, friends and foes. A minimum tariff of 10% on countries which did not particularly offend him, and then a higher so-called reciprocal tariff for countries with whom the U.S. has got a current account deficit or a trade deficit, and he wants to force those countries to change the numbers. So for South Africa, he imposed a 30% tariff of all exports from South Africa into the U.S., effectively making our products more expensive in America. Now, that cost will be carried by the American consumer. It's not carried by South Africans. But South Africans will carry the cost of fewer exports, lesser sales in the U.S. In that way, we will have a cost. But the cost of the higher products will be borne by the Americans. Now, it's quite interesting, Rita, that about 50% of our exports to the U.S. were exempt from this 30% tariff. Why? Because it's minerals which the U.S. actually wants and need. So they've neatly carved out what is in their self-interest and said, okay, that we will not tariff. Diamonds and iron ore are tariffed. They will carry the 30% tariff. But then there's a whole host of articles like copper, zinc, manganese, gold, the platinum group of metals, certain chemicals, and certain wood and nickel products are exempt. As I've said, that makes up more than half of our exports to the U.S., so they will not be affected. But it must be said that the sectors that will be affected very seriously is farmers, agricultural products, particularly citrus and wine and fruit juices, and very importantly, automotive exports. We've got automotive manufacturers in South Africa, BMW, Mercedes, the Ford Bucky, which is made primarily for exports to the American market. Those tariffs will hurt them very, very hard, no question.
Yeah, they will just not be competitive in the American market.
No.
Trump waved around a poster during this news conference, and it had certain quote-unquote facts about South Africa's tariffs. Were they correct?
The poster that he waved around showed that South Africa is imposing a 60% import tariffs against American exports coming into South Africa. Now, that's, of course, completely nonsense. And there are two sources for me saying nonsense. The one is a U.S. government agency. It is called the U.S. Trade Administration. And on their website, it says the following. South Africa reformed and simplified its tariff structure in 1994. Tariff rates has been reduced from a simple average of more than 20% to an average of 7.1% in 2020. Tariff rates mostly fall within eight levels ranging between 0% to 30%. This was written in January 24 and I accessed it on the website on the 3rd of April 25. So that's what the U.S. government agency said, mostly 0 to 30. Professor Johan Fourie from Stellenbosch analyzed the trade data of trade between South Africa and the U.S., and he found that there are only four categories from more than 1,000 categories where South Africa levies more than 60% tariffs on U.S. goods, four out of 1,000. The total value of those imports came to $379,000, and the total imports from the U.S. were $6 billion. So you talk about 0.0063. So I think what happened in the White House, somebody didn't see the comma and assumed 0.0063 is 60%. That's the only explanation I can have for it. You know, quite frankly, the White House and Trump are as informed on tariffs as they are on the so-called land grabs.
What does this mean for AGOA?
I think it means AGOA has gone, Ruda. AGOA was supposed to expire in August 25, 5 months' time, but these tariffs clearly overrule it. There are opinions to the contrary, but I think effectively AGOA is finished. So we can say goodbye to it.
The impact?
As we've discussed, the impact will be serious on the South African automotive industry, particularly those three companies that export to the US, Mercedes, BMW and Ford. It will be serious for citrus farmers countrywide, but particularly also in the Western Cape. It's serious for wine producers and serious for fruit juice people. So it will hit agriculture and it will hit automotive.
The government is preparing to table a comprehensive trade and relationship agreement with the US. Do you see a future for that?
I think it's a good thing that the government is doing it. It's the right thing to do. It's the appropriate thing to do. I think it has a zero chance of success. Why do I say that? Because the gripes that Trump has with South Africa are of such a nature that I don't think there's room for a deal. He wants us to suspend the court case against Israel. Well, we're not going to do that. He wants us to scrap the Expropriation Act. Well, we're not going to do that. The Expropriation Act will be changed in this country by this country's constitutional court, not by pressure from Trump. And so I can go through all five his elements or his gripes. So I would be very surprised. I don't want to be negative. I think it's the right thing to do. But I'll be very surprised if, given these gripes, we can make a deal with the U.S.
So in your view, we should diversify. We should find other clients.
Absolutely. There's no alternative. You know, the media makes a lot of the fact that America is our second biggest trading partner after China. And that's true, but it's also true that our exports to America is less than 10% of our exports, sitting about 8% or thereabouts. Of course, it changes from quarter to quarter. Now, 8% is a lot. I'm not trying to minimize it, but that means you've got 92% elsewhere. It also tells you that we have successfully, over the last 20, 30 years, diversified our exports, particularly to the East. The East takes 35% of our exports. Europe takes 25%. Africa takes 25%. So that's 85%. America, 8 to 10%, 95%. The Middle East takes about 3 to 4%. And then Australasia and South America the rest. Now, particularly in the Middle East, there is huge export potential. That doesn't mean it's easy fruit to pluck from a tree, not at all. But a country like Saudi Arabia has got something like $25 billion of agricultural exports every year. Of that, South Africa holds only about 1%.
You mean that's what they import?
That's what they import. That's what they import from other countries. And we only hold about 1% of that. So there's clearly scope to do that. China is an enormous agricultural importer. So our government, and particularly DERCO, Foreign Affairs, Agriculture, Trade and Industry, have got to step up our game of getting preferential trade agreements with those countries and get our agricultural products into their markets.
In summary, so what?
I think the biggest so what is that Trump has essentially launched a trade war against virtually the whole world, friend and foe. People that have been loyal friends of America and people who have been loyal enemies of America. Everybody got a clap. And we will have to see how that affects international relations, but it can't be good for America. The 30% reciprocal tariff levied on South Africa will hit our growth rate. Up till now, we've been working with a potential growth rate of 1.8% for 25. That growth rate, I think, will come down. We will have to see by how much. The different economists and research houses will tell us over the next weeks as they run their models. But essentially, our population growth is 1.3%, so you don't want to have economic growth lower than that. You want to have it at a higher number. Our labor force is expanding at 1.4%, so again, you want a growth rate higher than that. We'll have to see whether that can be achieved. The third so what is, I think the prospects of a deal with the United States or with the Trump government is very low. As I've said, the gripes that he has are gripes that we can't do much about. And that is going to preclude a deal. Unless, you know, the man is very volatile and transactional, maybe we do get a deal. And then nobody will be more happy than me. But I think we must be realistic about the chances.
And in the meantime, we must work really hard to diversify our export markets.
Absolutely. That is where people must now focus.
Thank you very much. I hope we don't have to come back to a microphone in the next week. You know, it's a Chinese curse that you live in interesting times.
Indeed.
Thank you for listening to the So What podcast. If you enjoy this content, please don't forget to leave a review and a rating, and please consider subscribing so you don't miss any future episodes. Also, tell your friends. Remember, you can find a written version of all JP's content at jplandtman.co.za.